Right now, we're not stopping. This movement is no school closures at all and no mergers at all. So Sanjay and I will be on this until they decide to inject some humanity into the process by which they choose to close schools and engage with our community about these choices.
And what's your assessment of the political leadership of Oakland in the face of this? Are they 100% behind this, or can they be moved to pressure the school board?
They can be moved. I mean, I think anyone can be moved. We're humans at the end of the day, you know. It's been laughable, their approach so far. They have not come out to see us. Gavin Newsom hasn't come out to see us, and we've demanded that many times over. We've asked Tony Thurmond to come out. We've asked the board to come and speak with us. And the mayor has come out and said, yes, they deserve to close these schools, Mayor Libby Schaaf, and has yet to actually provide proper reasoning. We have no numbers. Anyone looking at these numbers will kind of laugh at it. So leadership in Oakland, in the state of California, have been laughable so far. But we, you know, have open hearts and love and desire to meet and sit with them and break bread with them, ideally someday, and talk about the reasons why our communities need to stay open.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, and we'll report tomorrow on what happens in the school board vote tonight, which I believe is 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock our time on the East Coast. Moses Omolade is a community schools manager at Westlake Middle School, part of a group of educators on hunger strike protesting the Oakland Unified School District's proposal to close or merge over a dozen schools. This is day 8 of the strike. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe, wear a mask. One day.
This is KBOO Portland.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. on Tuesday. It's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Tracy Simmons and Abe Proctor. Stay tuned.
All right. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor, and joined as I am every week, the inestimable Tracy Simmons. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning, Abe. Good morning, listeners.
That was a little Neil Young to get you up out of your chair this morning. In case you hadn't heard, Neil's been in the news recently. Tracy, tell us a little about that.
I have heard he's stirring up trouble over at Spotify. So, I mean, I don't really know Neil Young's music. I'm a little younger than that. But I remember
You're just being mean.
I'm just saying, back in the day, I do remember driving across country with my mama, my beloved mama, and she's a big fan. And she wanted to play the music, and I was like, can we listen to Snoop Dogg instead? So, you know, I overrid her want to listen to Neil Young or cross country, but I probably missed out on some good stuff because he is stirring up trouble. He asked to take his music off Spotify, and a few other artists have followed suit because of Joe Rogan's experience and his insistence using his platform to, you know, spread COVID misinformation, disinformation, as he's moving in this direction, Neil Young has also encouraged, because Spotify refuses to completely get rid of Joe Rogan. They've paid him $100 million, and they're going to get their money's worth out of his Joe Rogan Experience show. But now he's calling on Spotify employees to quit because they won't deplatform a person that is causing a lot of harm in the space. So, a lot going on there. But I want to just check in with folks. It is, of course, we're a week into Black History Month, and it's been a rough start because not only has Joe Rogan been using his platform to, you know, spread COVID misinformation, get people to take horse paste, you know, have people taking hydroxychloroquine, potentially encouraging folks to follow the former guy's recommendations around bleach. You know, we can go down the list. He's also been using his platform for a lot of hateful rhetoric, including a mashup of his, you know, 12 years, 13 years of podcasting, where he repeatedly uses the N-word. So we're going to talk about that. You know, of course, in Black History Month, we've got to talk about the history of this word and why, for some folks, it's such a hard word not to use. So that's where I'm at in my mental. I'm having lots of conversations, unfortunately, about the N-word in my professional and personal life. I've wrestled with it myself as a person who loves to listen to Polo G and NLE Choppa and some of the most recent and regularly played hip-hop artists. The word is used quite frequently, but in a different way. And so we'll talk a little bit about that today. And yeah, I don't know where you are at with all of this, Abe, but I think you always come with some wit and some instructions for people who are of a different generation and a different look than myself, and I think it's helpful, right?
How many more times? How many more ways are you going to tell me I'm old this morning? How many times?
You know, I don't think you're old. We're just a few years apart, but you know, it matters.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Very interested to hear people's takes on the subject today. I do, though, have to double back a little bit, Tracy. I really feel like you missed out on a formative life experience on that road trip with your mom. Kudos to her for her excellent taste in music. I'm of the opinion that Neil Young is universally appealing. That might just be me. His lyrics are wonderful. He always sticks it to the man in some way. And I think you might have enjoyed that. So I hope you turn to Neil at least to give him a chance.
Well,
I'll even put together a playlist for you, but it won't be on Spotify.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to, you know, go dig into, you know, the case. It's, of course, not a case, but, you know, I'm a YT YouTube music user, and so I'll check it out. But, yeah, my mom is a big fan. She's a big fan of Meatloaf, as we talked about maybe last week. She is of that generation, and she's got great taste in music. Goes all the way back to, you know, Smokey Robinson, all the way to, you know, just a very eclectic taste in music. And she shared some of that with me, but not all of it. Some of it I was like, hold on. But to my detriment, so. Lots of opportunities there.
Yeah, I'm a big Neil Young fan. One of the greatest shows I ever saw in my life was Neil Young at Cortland Meadows in 1993, and he played with Pearl Jam and Blind Melon. And Pearl Jam came out at the end of the show for the encore to back him on Rockin' in the Free World, which we used as our intro to him this morning. So I won't go any further down that particular rabbit hole right now, but yeah, great moment in Abe's young life. So, as you mentioned, Tracy, Neil Young basically came out and told Spotify, it's Joe Rogan, it's me. You can have him or you can have me, but you can't have us both. And I'm not going to share a platform with a guy who is literally killing people by, okay, maybe not literally killing people, but perhaps contributing to the deaths of people who didn't otherwise need to die with his misinformation regarding the coronavirus pandemic. And Neil Young was true to his word. But as a number of people have pointed out, he was in a position to do this. He's an elder statesman in the world of rock music and the world of pop music. You know, he's made enough money to live on many, many times over. And he is not in the same position as a lot of up-and-coming young artists are. The music business has changed dramatically in the digital age. In fact, services like Spotify sort of rescued the music industry in the 2010s when illegal online transactions and sharing of music had pretty much undercut that industry completely. And I'm not here looking for sympathy for executives at record labels, who, of course, have exploited artists for generations and grown fat off their talent and off of their labors. But artists are having a harder time getting paid these days, even as their music is able to reach wider and wider audiences than it ever could before, because of the existence of the internet. And streaming platforms like Spotify are a big part of that problem. They pay literally fractions of a penny each time one of their artist songs is streamed on their platform. This is a lot different of a situation for artists than it was when people got their music by walking down to the record store and buying an LP, an 8-track, a cassette, or a CD, one of those antiquated storage media that people used to use way back in the 20th century. So things are radically different here, and Neil Young was in a position to make this demand and to walk away. But a lot of younger artists who might feel quite similarly are not. So there's an inherent problem here with the way streaming platforms work, who gets paid and who doesn't, and the leverage that artists are able to exercise, not just in terms of upholding their values, but in terms of their artistic creativity. So the question I have is, when somebody like Joe Rogan comes along, is demanding that he be booted off his platform, in this case Spotify, is that the right answer? Is that the correct remedy for the situation? What do you think?
I mean, I guess we get back into the conversation about cancel culture, when it really is about what, you know, a lot of people really purport to believe in, which is free market capitalism, that you put your money where you want to support and you take your money away from what you don't want to support. And just like, you know, we have the right to, if, say, Coca-Cola is sponsoring the, you know, GOP National Convention, I can decide I don't want to drink Coke anymore. And that's perfectly fine, and that's an option for me. And so I just, once again, we go back to this, you know, conversation that is, to me, a non-starter, a non-conversation. But it really works in that culture wars kind of stirring up the pot space that many conservatives sit in, that they can say, oh, they tried to cancel Joe Rogan, right, and make Joe Rogan the victim. And, you know, what's interesting here is, once again, right, Joe Rogan is making $100 million from Spotify. And for an average artist, it would take their record or album or song to be streamed 25 billion times for them to make what Spotify is paying Joe Rogan. So basically, right, people are signing up for Spotify, not necessarily to hear Joe Rogan, but they are paying a monthly fee. They're paying into the system, and that system is taking the money from what they actually came for, which is to hear music, and funneling it over to Joe Rogan, who then spews out all of this toxic nonsense, and I'll go into that shortly. But this toxic nonsense, so we have the right to say, okay, I don't want to be a Spotify user anymore. I'm not going to pay that fee every month. We have a right, and Neil Young has a right to say, take my music off that platform. You know, you're basically sponsoring harm to the public health. You know, other artists have the right, but many artists do not have the ability because they don't have the clout at this point.
Right.
And, you know, a lifetime worth of, you know, likes, right? Whatever, however we want to quantify it, right? That people are like, yes, I like that song. Right now, the industry is really built off of people's listening and streaming. And there's even an underground, you know, situation for people to get fake streams through a digital kind of scam. So artists who are on the rise can use a platform like Spotify and pay an agency to just stream their music all day and all night and all day and all night, which gives them a look like people are actually streaming that music. There's a whole industry for it, which is just fascinating, and I just recently learned about that. But they're doing that so that they can become more prominent, and then they can, you know, make the kind of money that other folks are making. What's interesting right now with the music industry, right, we have the pandemic, which has had a deleterious effect on live shows, live music, and touring and all of that, which is how, in the new era, a lot of artists are making their money. And so having a streaming service and having your music on all of the different streaming services is kind of the fail-safe for not making any money at all. Of course, live shows are coming back, and I'm really excited about that. Just bought a ticket for a show in May, and I'm hoping that the COVID will not return to put a wrench in my plans. But yeah, it's fascinating, you know, as we see new technologies emerge, that new markets and new ways of experiencing capitalism actually happen.
It's a situation that's more complex than it appears to be on the surface. Because I got to say, you know, approaching this all from a vacuum, with all these values considerations aside, Spotify is kind of the dream, isn't it? I mean, all this music available anytime you want to hear it. I mean, it's something that teenage Abe, you know, dreamed about as I was hustling around trying to record songs on a cassette off the radio. And hustling to make sure I caught the whole song, you know? I mean, it's incredible. The availability of all this wonderful recorded art on platforms like Spotify is kind of miraculous. At the same time, you've got to wrestle with problems like Joe Rogan. I think it's sort of, there's a couple slate of hands at play here. One involves the historical and current tendency of capitalism to pretend that it's value neutral and that all of its decisions are made with only the bottom line in mind. And secondly, a sleight of hand amongst conservative politicians in the United States, which is to somehow pretend that a concern about the public health and a political position are the same thing. So that if in any attempts to protect the public health by mandating certain activities or by banning certain activities is a repression of political speech, which is, of course, nonsense. And what controversies like the Spotify controversy show us is that there are plenty of opportunities to expose both of these sleights of hands for the morally and ethically bankrupt positions that they are. And disappointingly, we continue to miss those opportunities. Spotify said, okay, goodbye, Neil Young. We're going to keep Joe Rogan. Because we pay him a lot of money, and we pay him a lot of money because he brings in many, many, many users who pay a monthly fee to be on Spotify so that they can hear Joe Rogan. So it was an opportunity for Spotify to say, look, questions about the coronavirus, spreading misinformation about it, about the vaccines, about masking and social distancing, these things are matters of the public health. It's not censorship to demand that our people on our platform not do these things, not push quackery, not push these pseudoscientific cures, not to promote an anti-vax position. This is not protected political speech, but a threat to the public health. So it seems to me that this is a lost opportunity to draw a very clear line and say to somebody like Joe Rogan, if you want to continue to get paid $100 million to have your words reach the ears of millions of listeners every time you open your mouth, then you're going to need to do your part to safeguard the public health. And the fact that that has been allowed to masquerade masquerade as protected political speech is nonsense on its face, Tracy.
Of course, but they're always focusing on free speech and who can say what. And I've always said it, you know, free speech in this country is very different than speech in other countries, because countries like Germany recognize that, no, some speech leads to hateful actions. And I ask about, you know, the kind of concept of American free speech is, you know, free for who? to, you know, as Neil Young stepped in the space and took a stand, other artists started paying attention. So India Avery, she's a, you know, kind of neo-soul artist, amazing, beautiful, silky voice, love her, kind of showed up to the space like, you know what, this doesn't make sense. Spotify makes money on streaming. It pays artists almost nothing. Most of the streams are from Black artists when we're talking about up-and-coming, new, you know, innovative artists. Most of the streams are from Black artists, and it spends the money it's taking from those Black artists, basically because it's not paying them, and spends it on anti-Black podcasters, right? When we're talking about the fact that then... Joe Rogan was asked by Spotify to delete some of those really, really hyper, you know, anti-Black, racist rants. He did. And there's over 110 of his podcasts that had to be removed from the platform. And of course, then you hear the Donald Trump Jr.'s coming out and, you know, saying things like, you know, they're just taking away our rights. They're taking away our free speech. No, Joe Rogan agreed to it. He agreed that he did not want to be seen in that light and has said several times he's not a racist, which, you know, there's a whole other discourse, a whole other, you know, soliloquy I could go on about people when people say they're not a racist. Because oftentimes if you ever have to say that, it means that you've done something absolutely racist, and you probably are. however, you know, people are taking a stand, but Spotify literally is like, let's do the bare minimum to try and make ourselves look better in this situation by getting rid of those, you know, anti-Black, you know, N-word rants that were on the platform, but keeping Joe Rogan as if he's not going to do something into the future. In a moment, I want to share some of the terrible things Joe Rogan has said. So you get a sense of what I'm talking about.
yeah,
does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, I mean, generally when somebody opens a sentence by saying, "You know, I'm not a racist," it's a virtual guarantee that the next few sentences out of their mouths are going to be some racist nonsense. It's very similar to when, you know, an athlete's doing a post-game interview and they say, "Now, no disrespect to the other team," and then inevitably, the next thing out of their mouth. A bunch of disrespect for the other team. Very similar sort of situation. Yes.
Well, I think what's also interesting is that no one started talking about deplatforming Joe Rogan based on all the N-word statements and the crazy things that he's done, anti-trans, misogynistic, you know, things that he said. It was about the COVID misinformation. So once again, right, being racist is not enough for us to step up and stand in the gap and say no more, right? It has to be something completely different. And I think that's why oftentimes Black people are in this place of feeling like, yep, you know, the racism is okay, but the COVID misinformation was a bridge too far. Okay, that makes sense. Maybe.
Yeah. And it's worth noting that neither of those things, the racism or the COVID misinformation, are enough for Spotify to jettison Joe Rogan.
Right.
So
exactly. Because they're still making money off of him.
Exactly. So my question is, okay, I understand, you know, Spotify has operated, you know, it's a for-profit business. They're operated to earn a profit. Okay. But they want to keep this guy on their platform who brings them in a lot of revenue. Would it be acceptable, and I'm trying to frame this in a way so that it's broadly applicable to similar sorts of controversies that are out there. Would it be acceptable, instead of giving him the boot, to say, look, you know, you're now on notice. You're now on probation. If you spread any more racist nonsense or disinformation about the coronavirus pandemic, then we're going to suspend you. And then, you know, you could set out an increasing chain of consequences, so that if he doesn't cease and desist, then Spotify can be able to say in the end, okay, you know, we tried. We're going to have to let him go. And it's quite possible in that situation that its subscribers and the general public would reward them for that stance. They would probably also lose about a lot of subscribers who would just gut them because they're angry about Joe Rogan being booted. And then they would go to wherever, you know, whichever platform, and there inevitably will be one who is willing to host Joe Rogan.
Rumble. So yeah. Rumble is wanting Joe Rogan, and I don't even know what Rumble is, so let me just stop talking.
Do you think that's an acceptable approach to a situation like this?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I just feel like there's so much toxic energy in the world and toxic masculinity coming from this person. Just, you know, just a week or so ago, Joe Rogan had Jordan Peterson on his show and was talking about whether or not black people are actually black based on skin color. Like this, I mean, if you know anything about the history and construction of race and racism in this country, y'all made that stuff up. Okay? Like, at the end of the day, you made up the one drop rule. You made up the octoroons and mulattoes and all of these other ways that we describe people who are black, and said that if you're black, you're black forever, and you're in servitude forever, right? Y'all made that up. So you don't get to now take it back and say that, oh, black people shouldn't call themselves black because they're not actually black, unless they're from, quote unquote, what he said was, unless they're from Africa and walk around with no clothes. I mean, it's the most anti-black racist crap. He just did that. Okay, so I want to be real clear that this person has a long pattern of being racist, saying racist things. In January, he went on an ableist rant about Angelina Jolie, who has recently developed Bell's palsy, and said something about crazy, woman parts is the best woman parts. She's clearly crazy. He went on a whole ableist rant about Angelina Jolie. He's made, all kind of anti-trans slurs. And, of course, you know, Joe Rogan was the person who jumped in to support Dave Chappelle when Dave Chappelle got called on about using and spending his last stand-up special, denigrating trans people for over a 45-minute rant. He's made fun of people with Asian accents. He's, of course, you know, we saw the mashup of the N-word, but he's also talked about how black neighborhoods are like Planet of the Apes. I mean, this man is a vehement racist, and the people who listen to Joe Rogan and who would be upset if Spotify canceled him would be upset because they agree with the things that he's saying.
Yeah, well, absolutely, you're correct. Yeah, if any subscribers left Spotify, if Joe Rogan were to be fired, it would be absolutely because they're in solidarity with his noxious beliefs and his odious pronouncements. There's no doubt about that. I'm just wondering if there's not a way. You pretty much answered that question. No, it's not acceptable to set an escalating scale of consequences leading to eventual dismissal if you don't comply. So I'm really interested to hear what listeners have to say. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Sounds like you've been immersed in a lot of Joe Rogan. I'm really sorry about that, Susie. Thank you for bearing that burden for the show.
The thing is, you know, what's interesting here is that there are obviously a lot of people who are listening to what he's saying and are likely repeating it. And I'll say this a million times over. We say in our culture, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And the reality is, if we even look at the history of racism in our country, we look at things like the Holocaust, which I'm always looking at and seeing the different parallels. It doesn't start with people being gassed. It doesn't start with people being stolen from their country. It starts with ideas and words. And the same for trans folks, same for misogyny and harm towards women. It starts with ideas that are planted in people's brains and reified that then lead to actions. And so the harm that's being caused, I don't think is even quantifiable, because we don't know how many people are actually listening to this ilk and internalizing that and then behaving different ways. And we've seen in our culture, our society, at least the last 5 years, increasing rates of hate crimes, increasing rates of anti-Asian crimes. We've seen anti-Semitism on the rise. All of these things are not a consequence of just, coming out of nowhere. No, there's someone fueling this ideology, using the words, saying these ideas out loud, and people picking up on it and running with it. And so I think it's completely irresponsible for a platform like Spotify to continue sponsoring this man's behavior and the words that he's saying, because it's just, you know, we don't know the impact on society of having that kind of repugnant, you know, discourse being in the space. And if the, you know, the culture of Spotify was one of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which most companies, you know, will tell you that's their, you know, MO, they wouldn't want to sponsor that.
Yeah, you're right. I think it is irresponsible of Spotify to continue to give Joe Rogan a job, essentially. So given that they clearly have decided not to act ethically or responsibly, what is the answer for, you know, somebody out there who might be a Spotify customer?
I say there's all kinds of options you have, right? There's Apple Music, there's Tidal, there's with YouTube Music. And all of them cost around the same amount, but many of them pay their artists more, and they don't host Joe Rogan. So, you know, you can weigh your options there. For me personally, I've never been much of an Apple Music lover. You can go back old school, you could do Pandora. There's lots of ways you can stream the music that you want to hear without, you know, helping to prop up and put money in the pockets of Joe Rogan. I'm just going to say it like that. And you get to choose, and that's part of, you know, free market economy and capitalistic choice that we have.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe if enough subscribers walk away from Spotify, they will perhaps reconsider their ways. It's it's a mixed bag out there. I know YouTube is a problematic platform as well. You know, you might have to search around for a while before you find a streaming platform that offers content that doesn't clash with your personal values. It might be that you can't find one that is completely acceptable. Maybe you'll need to settle for one that's mostly acceptable. That might just be the reality of the situation. But it does seem like there's an opportunity for enterprising capitalists out there to start a streaming service that's free of this sort of toxic nonsense. Venture capitalists, I hope you're listening.
So I didn't even name one of the most egregious things. So, you know, Joe Rogan came up in comedy, and I don't think I've ever seen him do a stand-up comic show, but neither here nor there. But he is seen on one of his podcasts laughing as his guest is talking about forcing women to perform oral sex.
That's lovely.
Laughing about that, and goes so far as to say that, you know, female stand-up comics should be able to perform sex acts to get more time on stage. He's just a vile individual, and, you know, I came to know Joe Rogan through MMA, the mixed martial arts. So UFC has had him on as a commentator for years, and that's really how I know Joe Rogan outside of Fear Factor. So if y'all remember Fear Factor, that's another way Joe Rogan kind of stepped on the scene. And, you know, like the former guy and other folks with a huge platform, has literally used that platform for ill purposes and intent to continue reaping your hard-earned money and artists' hard-earned money through Spotify. I just say, don't do it. Don't pay him.
Yeah. It's also, you know, when you get into the weeds on this, too, there's essentially Neil Young, just to use him as an example, didn't have the right on his own to pull his music from Spotify because Spotify and the record label that has put out Neil Young's music over the years are contractually bound. Young had to go and ask his record label as a personal favor to release his body of work from streaming on Spotify. And again, that's something he was able to do because, you know, of his position, because of his success, because of his career, because of his wealth. And again, that's an option that might not be available to a lot of the younger artists. So it puts it puts people in a sticky situation. And subscribers and listeners as well. I would like to be able to listen to music on a platform like Spotify and know that my subscription dollars are not going in part to pay Joe Rogan's salary. That would be really nice. And it's a bit of a different situation than it is, for example, if I'm going to be a consumer of cable television. I can choose not to turn on Fox News, for example, not to give them any more eyeballs or any to boost their viewer ratings at all. But I can't really do the same by just selectively listening on Spotify, because my subscription money is helping to pay Joe Rogan's salary, whether I listen to him or not. So yes, it's this ain't your grandma's music industry, is what I'm saying. 503-231-8187. I'm almost hesitant to ask this, Tracy, but tell us a little more about what you've learned about Joe Rogan.
Oh, you want to learn more about Joe Rogan? So no, Joe Rogan was also
here we are.
Joe Rogan was also a birther. So I don't think people know that, but he was also a racist birther and was in on the whole question of, was Obama legally able to be the president because he wasn't born in America? Joe Rogan also, what's interesting here is in his use of the N-word, he's had a lot of people come out and tell us, signaling through him, that he's not racist, which is interesting. The Rock was one of the people, I think The Rock is one of those people that really is interesting to me because he's racially ambiguous and likes to be so. But he came out and originally said, Joe Rogan is not a racist. I know him. Other people, including black artists and people that, are tangentially connected to Joe Rogan, have also said that he's not a racist. And I always wonder how folks can, think that because individually they have a relationship with another person who has spewed all kind of racist ilk and terrible, repugnant things, that because you know them and they've been nice to you individually, they can't possibly be a racist. That's not how racism works, right? That's just not how it works. You can absolutely be racist. I think of Thomas Jefferson, going back into history, right? I'm sure, whatever he had going on with Sally Hemings and whomever else, that they were like, maybe he's a nice guy. I'm not sure. We don't know how that whole thing went down. But they may have individually had a relationship with this person who also owned 100+ black people, right? I mean, the idea that your individual relationship and connection to a person gives you the ability to speak for that person's heart is just incredibly interesting to me. I've known people, of course, who liked me and would say things like, well, you're one of the good ones, Tracy. No. Racist, right? Racist. Like, no, I'm not one of the good ones. I'm just one of them, right? I'm just black. I'm just myself, right? But of course, right? So there are people, Donald Trump, we've seen him with, taking pictures with Kanye West. Does it mean Donald Trump's not racist? No, Donald Trump has told us he is the least racist person, which means he's absolutely racist and in denial about it. I think going back to some of the work of Ibram X. Kendi, who is, wrote the book How to Be an Anti-Racist, to say that while we are trying to get rid of binaries in a lot of other places, there is a clear binary that you're either racist or anti-racist, and there's really no middle ground. And that's been really hard for folks to kind of wrestle with and settle with, because, right, if you are saying you're not racist, it's likely that you're just not able to admit that you have some racist ideology. And for anybody, being raised in this society in which we live that is hyper-racialized, super stratified by class, stratified by gender and gender expression, stratified in so many different ways, but racism is at the core of all of that, it's incredibly impossible to not be racist. So what we have to be doing is anti-racism, right, where we're always fighting against racism, where we're checking ourselves when we come up and have a racist idea or laugh at a racist joke or say something, that we're human and we've been conditioned in the society, but stepping away from the I'm not a racist, which all racist people will say, whether that's Mitch McConnell, whether that's, you know, Donald Trump, whether that, whoever it is, you did a racist thing. The first thing you're going to say is, I'm not a racist. Rather, you should say, I am an anti-racist, and I'm trying to check in with my racism. I'm trying to check in with the ways in which I've been socialized and conditioned to think, and that's going to lead me to, you know, showing up as a better human and trying and doing better all the time, because that's all we can do.
Yeah. Anti-racism is not a static state. It is a position of constant evolution and becoming. All right, let's go to the phones. We have on the line Chris, who purports to be a regular listener of Joe Rogan's. So I'm really curious to know why he's also listening to this show. That's an interesting concept. Let's go to Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Just to be clear, I'm a regular listener of Joe Rogan. He has a lot of different guests that I'm really interested in. And okay. I just wanted to say that I enjoy KBOO. I enjoy Joe Rogan. I like... Sorry, I'm in the middle of work. I like the fact that, you know, I don't believe he's a racist. Maybe I'm wrong. I hear about this video that somebody went 20 years back and pulled up some quotes. I guess he was quoting somebody saying the N-word, which nobody should be saying unless, you know, you're black or it's a song or something. But I like being able to listen to different people's views, and if it's vulgar, like racist, like David Duke or something, who has a YouTube, and I don't know why YouTube leaves David Duke on air. He's openly racist, and I don't listen to him. But I like opposing views. It's hard for the shows that I listen to on Joe Rogan. It's hard to say that he's a racist. I know he had that Dr. Robert Malone, which was really controversial because Dr. Robert Malone's one of the inventors of mRNA. And he'd mentioned about some things that he experienced. And it's good to have an opposing view. I mean, I don't agree with everything anyone says, but it's nice to hear another side, you know, another side of, you know, Big Pharma and all that stuff. But, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much all.
Let me ask you a couple questions right out of the gate. Well, the first is an observation. Nobody invented mRNA. It is a naturally occurring subcellular component. Secondly, is it really hard to say that Joe Rogan is a racist? I mean, I'm not, you know, I've just become familiar with his body of work in the last week, and I can say he's a racist. It didn't take a lot to push me across that line.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm not aware of that. That because he has a bunch of different types of people on his show, and he doesn't talk down to people. He doesn't talk bad. Well, I don't know. I guess I need to listen to that the clip you guys were talking about the comments he had made. And I'm sorry. What was your other question?
No, it wasn't a question so much. It was a comment. But go ahead. I imagine Tracy's got some contributions to make here too. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, I feel like the whole both sides is just a really interesting kind of perspective. And you know, I have a partner, and my partner sometimes watches Fox News, and it drives me absolutely crazy. And he says things like, "Well, you know, I want to see what you know the wackos are saying right now." And, you know, I get it to a certain point, but I don't want to hear it. And I don't want to watch, you know, Laura Ingraham. I don't care one lick about what Tucker Carlson has to say. And these are choices that we get to make. And so, I can respect it. I just feel like the more you listen to a certain kind of, you know, rhetoric, the more you could potentially presuppose yourself to kind of attaching to those ideologies. And so I've tried to avoid as much as I can so I don't get indoctrinated. Obviously, there is an indoctrination. We're seeing cult-like behavior from QAnon folks and, you know, others, mm-hmm. of believing things that are completely not true. And the only thing that I can, you know, kind of think of to understand that or make sense of that is that they're listening and, you know, consuming these ideas at such a rate in which they become true to them. And so I just want to avoid being indoctrinated into the cult altogether. So I've avoided it. But I didn't know that David Duke was on YouTube Music, and I don't listen to all the podcasts, and I wouldn't have been able to search that up. But now I'm like, ooh, yikes.
Yeah, a friend told me, and I was kind of disappointed. I was like, why? You know, there's so much censorship going on. Why do they let David Duke be on YouTube? It boggles my mind, because he's well known, you know, in that community there.
Yeah. But by the same token, you know, you don't have to have a swastika tattoo or wear a white hood to be a racist.
Right.
You don't have to wear it on your sleeve to you know, to operate within a systemic framework of assumptions and traditions and habits. All of us do that. And that's why I find it, I'm bumping a little bit, Chris. I got to be honest. You know, you say somebody sure. like David Duke with a track record, former Grand Wizard of the KKK, why is he on YouTube? Well, yeah, that's right. A very good question. But I think it's an equally good question to say Joe Rogan, who almost all the time is a racist on his platform, and who, to boot, spreads misinformation that is getting people killed. That's an equally valid question in my mind.
I think it's okay to ask questions, and I think it's okay for people to share their opinions and then leave it up to the listener to determine whether they're a wacko or whether it's a viable opinion.
Even when that personally. Opinion is getting people killed? I don't know.
Oh, I'm not, listen, I'm not
thank
sure
you for the
how...
call. Oh, go ahead.
Lone thing. I don't, you know, I always like to get a second opinion from different doctors before I go along with any kind of major surgeries. But, I mean, that's his opinion. I think we know what's right for ourselves. I'm not sure what quote you're referring to that was getting people killed.
No, I'm talking
months
about...
Months of telling people to take hydroxychloroquine and horse paste
right.
and
oh,
to, you know, all
yeah,
of that stuff.
The ivermectin, yeah, if you Google the Reuters article, you're familiar with Reuters, ivermectin in Japan,
mm-hmm.
there's some interesting information about that. But, I mean, I myself don't, I'm not a big fan of big pharmaceuticals and such, and there are certain cases
okay.
where, I have to take pharmaceuticals for, you know, if I got an infection or something.
Sure.
But I don't know. I think it's a slippery slope to silence certain people with different opinions that might have a different view on things. I think it's up to the listener to figure out whether it's the right thing to do or not. I mean, I wouldn't take my medical advice from Joe Rogan at all. He's no doctor at all.
Hang on. This is the distinction we're trying to make. A lot of people do. Is it a protected opinion to say take ivermectin when that is demonstrably false? It is. If you're calling that an opinion, well, it is the incorrect opinion. So is that politically protected, that opinion, when people go out after listening to your podcast to take horse dewormer and die?
I know what you're referring to. I mean, he didn't tell anyone to take it. That was what his doctor prescribed him. And the
yeah, but he knows very well, and we all know very well, Chris. We all know very well that a not insignificant number of people are going to do just that, take the ivermectin. It is a question of responsibility.
Well, I think you need a prescription. I think you need a prescription to get it, for one.
Okay.
My understanding is.
Okay. Well, I think we're done with this call. Any thoughts, Tracy?
Oh, I always have thoughts. You already know. But I think the caller is stating that he might have the wherewithal to, you know, find and be able to sift through information. Right? Information literacy really is a thing. But what we know about our society is that, you know, if Donald Trump is half as smart as, you know, most society, that there are people dumber than that. And what's interesting in that is that then we have to think about, well, is information literacy equally, you know, accessible to people? Absolutely, obviously not, because there are people who will follow pretty much anything anyone says. There were people who, when the former guy said drink bleach, they went out and drank bleach to try and prevent from getting COVID-19, right? There are people who don't have the ability, obviously, to parse out what is true and what's not true. There's a whole, you know, misinformation, disinformation, you know, environment in the media right now, right? We've got OAN, we've got Newsmax, we've got InfoWars, we've got all of these folks, you know, really, you know, getting rich off of telling people false information. And obviously there are people who aren't able to discern what's true and what's not, right? You can watch, you know, in one segment on, say, NBC News, and turn to Fox News, and they're talking about completely different things. So we're in a post-truth kind of world with our media, and social media doesn't help, because social media is also an environment of misinformation, disinformation, and not everyone has the same ability to discern, you know, in that space of information literacy. And so I say, if you're spewing falsehoods, if you're spewing terrible things, and could potentially be harming the public health or the racial health of our society, you probably shouldn't have a platform. Now, what's interesting about David Duke, and he mentioned David Duke, and I always think about David Duke as the original, you know, unhooded Nazi, right? The modern day Proud Boys took after David Duke to say, okay, we don't want to wear that outfit anymore. Let's get a cuter outfit. Or, you know, the folks who were, you know, marching not too long ago on Washington with their white face coverings, their, you know, blue hats and their khakis, right? All had the same outfit, but it looks a little more palatable than, you know, the white KKK Grand Dragon Wizard robe. And so what you've seen is kind of using David Duke and the way he's coded language that is racist, anti-Semitic, you know, anti-Catholic, anti-everybody, to, you know, whitewash it a little, make it a little cleaner, make it a little nicer and more palatable. And so I wonder what he's saying on his YouTube channel or whatever. Is it Google? I'm not sure. I haven't heard that podcast, but I'm interested now where I'm going to go and waste time listening to what he's saying, because I'm interested.
All right, let's go to Molly. Molly, good morning.
Molly.
Yes, yeah, good morning. And, well, I want to get back to what Tracy mentioned at the very beginning of the show, which caught me, I have to say, by surprise, that she wasn't really familiar with the music of Neil Young. And that really got me, because I thought, well, am I a person of white privilege that I, Neil Young was such a hero to me when he wrote the song about Kent State when the students were killed, whether they were black or white, we had the same problem that we have today. And so now the Rogan thing is switched from the pandemic misinformation to the use of the N-word, which to me is absolutely unacceptable. And that word cannot be used, and you can't ban a book either because it has that word in it. But I think that book maybe should have the word N dot 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 replaced so that it can be used as a teaching tool for generations to come of when people freely used that word and what that word meant. And when a black person says it to another African American, Negro, brother, sister, whoever you want to call the difference in the pigment of our skin, when they say it to each other, they have changed the power of that word in a way that I, from my white privileged place, who went to the poor people's marches on Washington where Dr. King spoke, not just about the difference in skin color, but the difference in money power, which when slaves were released were given nothing, but that word has power with the brothers. And when you hear Dave Chappelle use it and other songs saying it, when I hear other young people talk to each other that way, I'm never offended to hear a black person say it, because it is elevating that word, which was such a terrible, terrible word, to another place, which is a thing of beauty to me. And but let me add, and then I will get off because we're running out of time, that a white person could never say that word, and that's the beauty of it. A white person should never be able to say that word. I was taught that lesson personally, but I won't go into that story. And that's the power of the word now. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your show.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
You can just say black people, Molly. You don't have to say the brothers. That's just a tip for me. Black people, African Americans, if you prefer that. I prefer black. Just sharing my preference. For me, the challenge with the N-word for me is that I was able to use my privilege, my black privilege, to attend a conference. And at the conference, Dr. Eddie Moore Jr., Eddie Knows Moore, it's his handle on Twitter, gave a presentation. And it was a lot of people like me, 20 to 35 at the time, who listened to hip hop, grew up on hip hop music, and had been kind of wrestling with the idea of the N-word. And in that session, we talked about it. We talked about, you know, the history of the word. We talked about lynching, and that every black person that was lynched, and lynching still happens today, mind you. It's just not called lynching. It's called police brutality, police killings, officer-involved shootings. In that, we talked about kind of the history of the word. And at the end of the session, what he asked us to do is stand up and say, I am an N-word. I am an N-word. I am, and by the third time he asked us to say it, nobody said it. Because the reality is, that word was created to enslave, to denigrate, to dehumanize. And, you know, I still struggle with the music and saying it in music and singing along. But to people that I love and respect, I would never use that word. And that's just where I've kind of landed as a black person in this world, to say, I understand reclaiming a word. I definitely sometimes refer to my best girls as the B word. I sometimes, you know, make jokes about being a queer person, and say things that are inappropriate in that space, that I've reclaimed those words. But this one word is so painful for so many people that I just, I'm really wrestling. I continue to wrestle with it.
Yeah, I don't use it myself, and it's really a small sacrifice. It's no sacrifice at all, really.
Yeah, no inconvenience there.
My life is better not using that word. Let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn, quickly, we're right up against the end. Good morning.
Is that me? Oh, hey. Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just reading a book, Sons of Mississippi, and it gave an amazing definition of racism. And in the 50s, racism was the White Citizens Council, Chamber of Commerce, sheriffs, courts, sometimes the FBI. And it was just a completely comprehensive oppression system that was just almost unimaginable. And so racism has changed in some ways, but some of the attitudes are still there.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, this has been, I wish we had another hour at least. This has been a really fruitful conversation. I will say this about, before we close, about platforms like Spotify. The internet is wonderful, and it has made information and music and everything else under the sun available to so many people instantaneously. And it's miraculous in that regard. But what we've lost in this age of universal accessibility is editorial oversight and responsibility. It used to be, for example, if you, or that still is in many journalistic outlets, if you want to put something in the New York Times, you're going to have to work with an editor. The editor is going to make you double source your story. The editor is going to make you fact check everything. There's a gatekeeper there to make sure whatever eventually makes it onto the page or onto the screen is true to the extent that it can be verified. That does not exist on a platform like Spotify. So maybe the answer, Tracy, is some sort of some ethical board or editorial board to regulate content.
Fancy that. I mean, we have the FCC, so
yeah,
I think we're okay.
Yeah, I don't know if the FCC has any power to regulate podcast content, for example.
I don't think so, but could.
Spotify as a corporation could implement something like that.
Exactly. So I'm looking for the David Duke podcast, and I'll report back. But we are out of time. What is a good thing is that it looks like the COVID surge of the Omicron variant is fading away a little bit, but you still need to mask, social distance, wash your hands, stay home when you're sick, take care of yourselves and each other. If you're still not boosted, you can get a booster. You can get a vaccine. Even little ones can get vaccines. We're still waiting on the information about children under 5, I believe. So there's hope on the horizon. And so, of course, as we see the sun shining and spring coming alive, we're still in winter, but it's coming soon. Take care of yourselves and others, and do your part to stop the spread of COVID, to stop the spread of other illnesses, because we've really had a great time not getting sick from things like the flu because we're all masking. So keep it up, people. Keep it up. We want to get out of these woods.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in and for your contributions. This has been Too Much Information on KBO. We'll be back next week.
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
I feel that if we don't activate our sense of interconnectedness with all life, if we don't start sowing the seeds of what